Hamas leader says the entire world agrees that the Israeli regime has been defeated in its war in Gaza, while Palestinians have emerged victorious. Tehran says its missile attacks on Mossad headquarters and Daesh bases were in response to recent terrorist attacks against the country and the assassination of resistance figures by Israel. The Israeli military uses Palestinian hostages as human shields in the West Bank as the U.S.-Israeli genocide rages in Gaza. This is News. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says that the entire world agrees that Palestinians in Gaza are the oppressed ones, but at the same time victorious in the face of the Israeli onslaught on the besieged strip. Ayatollah Khamenei said that all the people around the world, whether Muslims or non-Muslims, consider the occupying regime as a bloodthirsty wolf that's fallen apart. He hailed the government and people of Yemen for standing in solidarity with the people in Gaza. The leader said that the Yemenis have taken great measures, inflicting damage on vital channels of the Zionist regime, despite U.S. threats. He expressed hopes that the Yemenis will continue their perseverance. In recent weeks, the Yemeni armed forces have targeted more than 24 Israeli or Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. The operations were in response to the Israeli bloodshed in Gaza and blockade of the Palestinian territory. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has staged missile attacks on targets of anti-Iran terrorist groups in Syria and an Israeli espionage center in the Iraqi Kurdistan. A total of 24 ballistic missiles were fired during the anti-terror operation. IRGC says the strikes on targets in Syria were in response to the recent deadly attacks hitting Iranian cities of Kerman and Rusk. Four missiles hit Daesh terrorist bases in Syria's Idlib. Nine also struck positions of other terrorist groups in Syria's occupied territories. The IRGC said that the missiles hit terrorist commanders and key elements linked to anti-Iran terrorist attacks. 11 ballistic missiles also struck and destroyed one of the headquarters of Israel's Mossad spy agency in Iraq's northern Kurdistan region. That operation was in response to the recent Israeli assassination of commanders of the IRGC and resistance movements in West Asia. The force pledged to continue what it called punishing anti-Iran terrorist groups. Meantime, IRGC says that it used the Khaybar Shekan ballistic missiles in the recent operation against anti-Iran terrorist groups in Syria. The long-range missiles were fired from Iran's southern province of Khuzestan and successfully hit terrorist bases in Idlib, some 1,300 kilometers away. Khaybar Shekan, that's a high-precision guided missile, has a range of 1,450 kilometers. The optimal design of its warhead ensures high maneuverability, allowing it to penetrate missile shells and counter anti-missile systems. It's the third generation of Iran's ballistic missiles unveiled in 2022. Iran has made considerable progress in its missile program in recent years. However, Tehran has repeatedly stressed that the missile program is pure defensive and meant for deterrence. Ibrahim Vahdi joined us a while ago with details on Iran's latest attacks on terrorist bases in Syria.
The targeted headquarters in Idlib used to be training centers, according to local sources, because terrorists were concealing these information. They are not allowing anyone near these targets, near these headquarters, to conceal information. According to local sources, these headquarters used to be training centers for the so-called ISIS Khorasan terrorists who used to be trained there to be sent later to Afghanistan, to the Iranian borders to carry out terrorist attacks inside Iran. The IRGC fired high precision ballistic missiles that reached their targets, destroyed these headquarters. The headquarters are affiliated with the Turkestan party, which is affiliated also with HTS, Al-Qaeda offshoot in Idlib, which is also cooperating with ISIS. We know that regardless of the names, the brands, it's all the same terrorists operated by the U.S. and Israel. Also, according to local sources, the targets were destroyed completely.
Iran says that the IRGC's strikes on targets in Syria and Iraq are in line with its efforts to combat terrorism and defend its sovereignty and security. Foreign Ministry spokesman says that the strikes were a just response by Iran to aggressors against the country's security. Nasser Kanani says Iran has always been a supporter of regional peace and stability. He noted that the Islamic Republic abides by the principle of respecting other countries' sovereignty and territorial integrity, but the country won't hesitate to deter sources of threats against its national security and will punish those who commit crimes. The spokesman said that the enemy miscalculated and so perpetrated crimes against the government and people of Iran. He was referring to the recent terrorist attacks in the Iranian cities of Kerman and Rusk. We were earlier joined by political commentator Ali Rusk, who shared with us his views on IRGC's missile strikes on targets in Syria and Iraq.
Well, this is, I believe, a unique strike, particularly the one in Syria, but I think most important of all is that Iran showed that it can respond on two fronts simultaneously. So I think that speaks a lot about the capability of Iran, showing that it's able to carry out, you know, these two retaliations simultaneously. A lot was being said before these operations that Iran was not facing up to the challenge, or that Iran was taking the situation lying down a lot of the latest escalation which has taken place. So I think that these latest operations have come to send a clear message that Iran is ready to take action. And I think that is a very important message, particularly at this time where, you know, Israel is launching aggressions, whereby the Americans are targeting the Houthis. So the timing is of great importance.
Some 100 days into the U.S.-managed Israeli genocidal war on Gaza, the regime keeps pounding the Palestinian territory with air raids and shelling. Latest attacks have claimed the lives of 160 people across Gaza. They hit different areas, including the southern city of Khan Yunis and the central city of Deir al-Bala. Israel has shifted focus from Gaza's devastated north to the southern cities of Rafah and Khan Yunis. Officials have announced that the operations in southern Gaza will soon enter a less intensive phase. The regime is facing growing international outcry over a soaring civilian death toll that has topped 24,280. Palestinian resistance has launched a barrage of rockets at Israeli settlements in the Negev desert in retaliation for the ongoing bloodshed in the Gaza Strip. Rocket sirens sounded in the Netivot settlement and the surrounding towns. Israeli media said that resistance forces targeted the settlements with some 50 rockets. The operation was conducted from the central Gaza Strip, and that amid battles between resistance fighters and invading forces in northern Gaza. Intense fighting has been reported there, despite the Israeli military's claims of ending operations in the north. Meanwhile, IOF has confirmed the death of a soldier injured in Gaza in December. Academic and investigative researcher David Miller says Israel's bid to escalate the genocidal war in Palestine is failing as resistance groups are fighting off the regime in different fronts.
The resistance has not depleted its stock of armaments, mostly, of course, as Qassam Brigades have been saying just yesterday, mostly homemade. But then, of course, let's remember that they're fighting on five or six fronts. They're also fighting on the northern front against Hezbollah, against the Red Sea front, against Ansarella in Yemen. Of course, the Islamic resistance in Iraq has been doing extraordinary things, including attacking US bases in both Iraq and in Syria, and indeed, of course, Israeli bases in the Golan Heights. So they're fighting on many fronts, and it looks to me like they want to escalate. But if they do escalate, that's a problem for them, because Hezbollah has not used anything but a fraction of its weapons, and indeed none of its medium-range missiles, which can reach the whole of the territory of what's called Israel. So they're playing a game where they want to try and pull the US back into the conflict, and they're doing that by trying to escalate. And that's a game which probably isn't going to work. The Gerald Ford aircraft carrier has left the Mediterranean. The Americans are showing clear signs of actual fear in their confrontation with Ansarella, in the sense that they briefed Ansarella in advance about these raids that the US and UK did, that they have not, they've backed off on the idea of a full confrontation through this ridiculously named mission to protect prosperity. So it looks like the Americans are not wanting to escalate. It can go on longer. The resistance is holding out. The resistance is winning in Gaza and, of course, on the northern flank in Lebanon. But what their game is, I guess, is to try and pull the U.S. in, and I think that's going to fail, and that will be very, very difficult for them.
A Palestinian shop owner says that Israeli occupation forces used him as a human shield in their latest raid on the town of Dora in the West Bank.
What happened today is that the army raided Dora. I was at my shop. The army asked to search the shop. He asked me to let the workers leave the shop. They searched the shop and myself. They took us outside and put me on the floor. Then he took me toward the jeeps. He told the workers to go, and he told me that he will use me as a human shield. The young people shouldn't hurl stones. You will walk in front of me. That's what happened, and he took me towards the center of the town.
The regime forces used live fire to disperse around 100 protesters during the Monday raid on Dora. Palestinian Health Ministry says at least two people were killed and 10 injured during the raid. Tensions have escalated in the West Bank since the beginning of the bloodshed in Gaza. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, some 350 Palestinians have been killed and 4,000 injured in the Israeli raids across the occupied West Bank. Now, for an update on the situation in the occupied West Bank, let's go to Ramallah and bring in Mona Kandil, our correspondent. Mona, over to you.
The Israeli regime insists to go on with their aggressive policies and strict measures against the Palestinians all over the occupied West Bank. Just in the last 2 hours, Israeli forces raided the refugee camp of Shafat, North Al-Quds, as well as Anata, Northeast Al-Quds, and the Israeli forces through heavy tear gas and stun grenades, poisonous, of course, tear gas canisters at the Palestinians. There was no protest, nothing was taking place, but it's an attempt by the Israeli forces to terrify the Palestinians and to keep reminding them that they are under occupation. 355 Palestinians were killed by the Israeli forces since the 7th of October here in the occupied West Bank. On Monday alone, three Palestinians were killed. One Palestinian, 37-year-old, was shot dead by the Israeli forces at one of the military checkpoints, Anab military checkpoint, East Tul Karim. He didn't carry out an operation. He was not attempting to carry out an operation. Why we are saying this? Because the Israeli military didn't claim that a Palestinian was trying to carry out an anti-Israeli operation, and he was shot killed. He was shot killed by the Israelis at the military checkpoint. Maybe one of the Israeli forces felt that this man looks suspicious. But even though the Israelis don't have to justify their moves, they continue killing Palestinians. They continue using their weapons to shoot and kill Palestinians, like what happened also in Dora, when the Israeli forces raided Dora in Al-Khalil to conduct arrests among Palestinians. The Israelis opened fire at the people, wounded a number of people. Palestinians were at the roof of their the roof of their building in order to check what was going on. A 21-year-old Palestinian mother, Ahed Mohammed, was shot and killed. Another Palestinian, Mohammed Abu Sabah, 22-year-old, was shot and killed in the streets of Dora, and the Israelis prevented ambulances to rescue him. And like this Palestinian man has said in the report, in this report, Baha Abu Ras was used by the Israeli forces as a human shield. The Israelis raided his phone shop, and they took him. They clearly told him that we will use you as a human shield to prevent the Palestinians from throwing stones or rocks at the Israeli forces. And it was very clear how the soldier was holding him with one hand catching his hand. The other hand, the Israeli soldier was holding a rifle and putting it on the shoulder of this young man. The Israelis continue arrest raids, and they are detaining Palestinians, dozens of people every day. Today alone, 50 Palestinians were detained in Ramallah, in Jenin, Qalqilia, Nablus, Ariha. We are speaking about some 6,000 Palestinians were detained since the 7th of October. The higher number was in Al-Khalil, where the Israeli forces have arrested 1,300 Palestinians, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Society. Those 1,300 Palestinians, including women and children, as well as elderly, and sometimes whole family members, were detained in the Israeli arrest campaigns that targeted people, civilians, of course, in the city of Al-Khalil and villages.
All right, I appreciate that update. Mona Kandil, our correspondent in occupied Ramallah. Now, one of Japan's largest shipping companies says it's suspended navigation via the Red Sea for all its vessels. Nippon Yusen, also known as NYK Line, says it's considering alternative routes for the ships. The decision came as tensions mount in the Red Sea over the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Yemeni armed forces have recently conducted operations against Israeli-bound ships in the waterway in support of Palestinians. A Greek-owned cargo ship was reportedly targeted with a missile in waters off Yemen earlier on Tuesday. The day before, Yemeni fighters targeted a U.S.-owned vessel in the Gulf of Aden. Yemen says that the attacks against Israeli-linked ships will continue until Israel's genocidal war in Gaza ends and the siege is lifted, and that despite recent strikes by the U.S. and U.K. on Yemen because of its anti-Israeli operations. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The widespread destruction of historical sites in Gaza by the Zionist regime deprives Palestinians of physical representations of their history and memories. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, the material loss Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have suffered in 3 months of the Zionist regime's bombing is unprecedented. Not only have they lost their homes, entire neighborhoods and civilian infrastructure, but residents say another immeasurable damage that cannot be repaired has been the erasure of Gaza's history. Since the beginning of its war on Gaza on October 7th, the Zionist regime's military has targeted and destroyed dozens of heritage sites, including historic churches and mosques, cultural museums, and archaeological structures that date back thousands of years. Key religious sites have been a target for the Zionist regime's airstrikes and artillery shelling across the different districts of Gaza. Many of those sites had been transformed into shelters for displaced Palestinians at the time of the attack, resulting in dozens of casualties. On October 18th, the Greek Orthodox Church of St. Porphyrius was damaged by an Israeli regime airstrike on the adjacent 141-year-old Ahli Baptist Hospital, the oldest hospital in the strip. 2 days later, it was directly targeted by a strike that killed at least 16 people and wounded dozens of others among the families who were taking refuge in the church. Randa Artin, a Christian resident of Gaza, said the church was one of the few religious sites where she and her community would pray and spend religious holidays, since the Zionist regime does not grant them permits to travel to Beit Lah through the Erez crossing each year. The 53-year-old woman told Middle East Eye, "The churches in the Gaza Strip are not many, but all of them are old and historic, so if one church is destroyed, it is not actually one church, it is hundreds of years erased. Unlike any other churches, we had a special spiritual connection with the Greek Orthodox Church in particular. It is a symbol of Palestinian Christians in Gaza and even across Palestine as well. We used to attend Christmas there and light up the tree along with the children every year. It is hard to believe that the few places available for Christians in Gaza are now destroyed." The almost 900-year-old church, one of the oldest in the world, was one of the three churches that were damaged across the strip. In addition to churches, at least 114 mosques have been destroyed and 200 others have been damaged in Gaza, including the 13th-century Othman ben Qashqar Mosque in Al-Zaytun neighborhood south of Gaza City, and the medieval Great Omari Mosque, the largest and oldest mosque in Gaza, located in the heart of the old town east of Gaza City and dating back to the 7th century. Ahmad As-Saqqa, 64, who lives in Ash-Shujaiya neighborhood, a few kilometers away from the Omari Mosque, said that she has prayed in the mosque since she was a child, especially during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Currently displaced in the Deir al-Balah in the central Gaza Strip after her house was severely damaged, Saqqa said she was more saddened by the destruction of the mosque than of her own home. Saqqa told Middle East Eye, "I was born and have lived all my life in this neighborhood. When I was around 6 years old and throughout all my childhood years, my father used to take me and my siblings every night during Ramadan to perform the Taraweeh prayers in this mosque. I had my childhood and adulthood memories there. For us Palestinians, it is more than just a mosque. It is our history and our present. When we talk about Gaza, we talk about the Omari Mosque. We believe that it would be impossible to harm such a place, not just because it was a holy site, but because of its rich history and importance for both Muslims and Christians around the world. The mosque, which was converted from a Byzantine church, is considered one of the oldest in the world. Close to the Omari Mosque lies Hammam al-Samra, a prominent and rare surviving example of an Ottoman architectural site in Gaza. On December 30, the Zionist regime's strikes directly hit the site, destroying Turkish-style features that date back to over 1,000 years. In a report released by Heritage for Peace in November documenting the impact of the Zionist regime's war on Gaza's cultural heritage, the organization said at least 104 out of 195 architectural heritage sites that it counted in the coastal enclave were destroyed or damaged. Since it is impossible to assess the damage on site, the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, experts say they have been remotely monitoring the situation using satellite data and information transmitted to us by third parties, in coordination with its partners and UN agencies on the ground and our office in Ramallah. A UNESCO spokesperson told Middle East Eye, requesting anonymity, UNESCO has initiated early October remote monitoring of the damage. As part of this remote monitoring, we are particularly concerned about the situation of the ruins of St. Hilarison, inscribed on the National Tentative List of World Heritage in 2012. These are the remains of one of the region's earliest Christian monasteries. The ruins of St. Hilarison are part of the Tell Amr site located in An-Nusayrat camp in the central Gaza Strip. The site has been severely damaged by the Zionist regime's campaign. The conflict in the Gaza Strip has caused a serious humanitarian crisis affecting all aspects of civilian life. As stated publicly on several occasions, UNESCO is gravely concerned about this impact on education, culture, and protection of journalists, the pillars of its mandate, he said. While humanitarian emergencies are a legitimate priority, the protection of cultural heritage in all its forms, as well as the protection of educational and media infrastructures, must also be ensured in accordance with international law, which stipulates that cultural property is civilian infrastructure and as such must neither be targeted nor used for military purposes, he said. Another notable casualty of airstrikes in the Gaza City was the Central Archive building, which was destroyed on November 29th. Run by the municipality of Gaza, the building contained thousands of historical documents and national records about Gaza dating back over 100 years. In addition, at least three museums were destroyed or severely damaged, including government-run Pasha Palace Museum, which dates back to the 13th century and was directly targeted.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا O you who believe, اِسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
The audience of IRB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
In the month of Rajab, we're going to have an in-depth discussion about shaitan, okay, to try to understand what is shaitan, who is shaitan, are there different manifestations of shaitan, what does shaitan want from us, how does shaitan attack us, and how we can protect ourselves from the grips of shaitan. Because if we can successfully understand who our opponent is, right? And that's the thing that I think in life, we don't give enough importance or credence to who shaitan is. Yeah? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has explicitly told us in the Quran that what innahu aduun mubin. He is your manifest enemy, right? He's not playing on words. He's not trying to scare us. He's not trying to make us shocked. Allah doesn't do those type of things. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala warns, right? We recite in Surah Yasin, we recite this all the time. What does Allah say? Alam a'ahad ilaykum ya bani adama an la ta'budu shaytan. That had I not promised or taken ahad from you, did I not take enjoin upon you, all the children of Adam, to not do ibadat of shaytan. An la ta'budu shaytan. Why? Innahu lakum adu. He is your manifest enemy, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says. Wa ani'buduni hadha siratum mustaqim. And worship me. Don't worship shaytan, but worship me. I will take you down the right path. وَلَقَدْ أَضَلَّ مِنْكُمْ جِبِلًّا كَثِيرًا. He says he has taken so many of you off the track. Yeah? And he not only does he say, look, don't worship him, he is your manifest enemy, but then he says, look around you. How many has he already misguided? Right? Why do you not pay attention? أَفَلَمْ تَكُونُ تَعْقِلُونَ. Why do you not apply reason to this particular warning? Now, you know, when you look at this verse, like the verse says, don't obey shaitan. And so like I'm sure the thought that comes into our head is like, who obeys shaitan? You know what I mean? Like unless you're a group or something. But like generally speaking, like which one of us would actually say, yes, I am obedient to shaitan? But what we have to understand is that, you know, obedience to shaitan comes in so many different ways, yeah? It's not just one way where I say, I'm doing this, qurbat as shaitan, right? No, like no one would actually in their right mind say something like that, right? But like as we've talked about often, it's the translation of our actions, right? That if God says one thing, and my hawa, my desire, a thought tells me to do something else, and I do that other thing, what's the translation of that? That I have abandoned the worship of God and taken another path of worship, right? And if it's not the path of God, it is by default the path of shaitan. Right? There's no other path. There's two paths. You know, and the concept of shaitan is not like how maybe other religions have, where Allah gives him full domain over hell and says, you run hell, I run heaven, let's have a battle. This is not how Islamic understanding of shaitan works, right? And we'll talk about this in detail. Like, it's really interesting. I think the third lecture on this, which is not this coming Tuesday, but the following week, it's a really interesting understanding of the relationship between Allah and Iblis, right? And what type of relationship that is. But what we have to try to understand is that the obedience of shaitan can happen in many different ways because shaitan will use every trick at his disposal, like literally every trick, right? So sometimes for those who are tempted by these things, shaitan will attack us with music. Shaitan will attack us with the opposite gender. Shaitan will attack us with gambling. Shaitan will attack us with all of these vices that we see. But then most of us are not victim to that, right? Like, we're like, you know, I have better control than that, right? So, like, I'm not tempted by music. I'm not tempted by this. I'm not, and the things that I am tempted by, I work on it. So I think that because I am guarding myself in this perspective, that shaitan is out of avenues to attack me. No, right? Because the very next way shaitan will attack us is in our faith, right? He attacks us in our faith. And so in our faith, shaitan will attack us through, for example, riya, right? Or ujub, right? So I begin to recite something and I like the praise that I get, so now I want more praise. And so now shaitan has diverted my obedience to God to another way, right? Or I begin to think highly of myself, I get attention. So now that's the path that I take, that shaitan comes and attacks me. But sometimes maybe even it's not that. Right? Like ujub doesn't affect me. Self-admiration is not something that happens. So maybe I don't even recite. And so I don't get self-admiration. I don't get riya. So I'm saved from these things. Does that mean that shaitan says, bas, my job is done? No, right? Shaitan will now come through our worship. Did you say Allahu Akbar properly? Yeah? That's how shaitan comes. Right? Did you do your tasbih properly? Right? Did you do your wudu properly? Right? You're worshiping Allah. You better do it properly. Right? And so in our minds, the thought comes that, man, I'm trying to worship God. God. So I better do it properly. Right? And so shaitan now begins to whisper these thoughts. And this is where we have to understand why this statement by the Imam is so powerful. Right? Where the Imam alayhi salam says again, I repeat, كُلُّ مَا شَكَكْتَ فِيهِ مِمَّا قَدْ مَضَى famdihi kama huwa. Everything that you doubt after you have moved on from it, ignore that doubt, the Imam alayhi salam says. You see why? Because he knows that this is one of the ways that shaitan will attack us. And I tell you what will happen. That the moment I go back and I fix that which I have a doubt in, after Shari', the one who legislates law, tells me to ignore that doubt, shaitan says, I got him. Yeah? That's it. That's it. Right? Shaitan has found a way that he knows he can attack us. Because this is where we have to understand, right? Like, he is targeting the fabric of our faith at this particular point. Because my intention for repeating that thing, whether it's a dhikr, right? Whether it's a masah, something so small as just wiping my head again, right? After I have moved on. I am doing it, why? I'm not doing it because shaitan's telling me to do it. I am doing it because I genuinely want to give God the best version possible. The best version possible, right? When we do something for each other, we try to give the best version possible. We're doing something for God. Repeating it is not going to make me tired, right? It's not like I have to repeat the tawaf again. You know what I mean? Like that happened to me, you know, when I went for Hajj, the one and only Hajj, you know. After they'd done everything, the final Safa Marwa, I didn't realize I went out of bounds on Safa. You know, like, you know, there's a lane in Safa. And I remembered on my seventh one. And then someone said, you went out of bounds. And I had to do it again, yeah. Here it's just a masah. I don't have to walk seven times back and forth. That's when I had to think about it. You're like, Ya Allah, accept from me, yeah. But here, it's a masah. I'm just wiping my head. I am just doing this dhikr. Wala dhalin. I repeated it. What's the big deal, right? But what we have to understand is that here, my desire to give the best version of this act to Allah contradicts entirely what Allah wants me to do. Allah says, leave it. You're okay. Don't go back and fix it. You're fine, right? And the reasoning is obvious, right? So obviously there's one aspect where he doesn't want shaitan to interfere in us, right? Because that's how he does. But another aspect is that you are more likely to remember or recognize you did something wrong while you're in it, not after you've left it. You know what I mean? After you've already passed it, then the doubt may come and you don't remember. But if I really said dhalin wrong, then while I said dhalin, I could fix dhalin. Right? Not after I've started the second surah to now remember back what I did 10 seconds ago. None of us have that ability, you know? And so here I am faced with this situation where on one hand, Shari', the one who legislates, is telling me don't do it. Shaitan is telling me do it. And I am doing it not because I am obedient to Shaitan, but I am doing it because I want to give the best version. But even in this, Shaitan's got me if I do it, right? Shaitan has this grasp on me. And it's this haze of piety that I have. And that's how Shaitan attacks us. Man, he's vicious, right? Like, we have to be mindful of this.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareemun Aadi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati. صلوا عليه
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A UN official has recently warned that if the Zionist regime does not allow fuel into Gaza immediately, trucks will be stuck at the southern Rafah crossing, unable to distribute anything at all. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry, the Zionist regime committed 13 massacres against Palestinians recently. The Palestinian death toll has risen to 23,706 since October 7th, with more than 60,000 injured, the ministry reported recently. Thousands more are still missing or buried under the rubble. All internet and telephone systems have been destroyed by the Zionist regime attacks, plunging Gaza into a communications blackout once again, according to the service provider Platel. Meanwhile, the head of Human Rights Watch stated that the Zionist regime must abide by the International Court of Justice ruling, which will likely be announced at the end of this month. Tirana Hassan told Reuters, "If Israel does not comply with the measures or orders of the court, then it is up to the international community to ensure that they are leveraging whatever pressure that they can to encourage Israel to actually implement the measures." The group released its World Report, which documents global human rights violations over the past year. Hassan said that Human Rights Watch was able to document the Zionist regime's crime of starvation as a means of warfare on the people of Gaza. Hassan told Reuters, "In the throes of this war, what we have seen is consistent, flagrant violations of international humanitarian law." The Zionist regime is methodically blocking aid convoys headed for hospitals in northern Gaza, or slowing them down using lengthy inspections, according to the United Nations aid agencies. Andrea Di Domenico, head of the UN's local office for the coordination of humanitarian affairs, asserted recently that the Israelis have systematically or quasi-systematically refused to allow the aid trucks through. He explained that Israel had only partially approved 3 out of 21 aid missions requested by his agency. He said, "In particular, they have been very systematic in not allowing us to support hospitals, which is something that is reaching a level of inhumanity that for me is beyond comprehension." Recently, all aid trucks will be stuck at the southern Rafah crossing, and no humanitarian aid will be distributed across Gaza, Domenico warned. He said, "We will simply be unable to unload the trucks. We don't have the fuel for the forklift, and we do not have the fuel for the trucks that are distributing the assistance out to where the people in need are." Auni Khattab, the director of the Palestine Red Crescent Society's Ambulance Center, was released recently after more than 50 days in the Zionist regime's detention. The medical association posted video of Khattab's emotional reunion with his family members and colleagues. Khattab had been abducted by Israeli troops on November 22nd with several other colleagues while he was transferring injured patients from Ashifa Hospital in Gaza City to the southern Gaza Strip. Mohammed Abu Salmia, the head of Ashifa Hospital, has still not been released from the Zionist regime's detention along with approximately 100 other healthcare workers. Recently, PRCS held funerals for four of its paramedic team members killed in a targeted Israeli airstrike under ambulance in Deir al-Balah in the central Gaza Strip. Two patients inside the ambulance were also killed. The paramedics were martyred while wearing the Red Crescent emblem, which is supposed to be protected according to international law, PRCS stated, adding, "Our colleagues were intentionally targeted while inside an ambulance clearly marked with a Red Crescent emblem." The United Nations Human Rights Office stated recently that it is deeply concerned that Israeli forces have placed civilian lives at serious risk by ordering residents from various parts of Middle Gaza to relocate to Deir al-Balah while continuing to conduct airstrikes on the city. The United Nations added that four separate strikes on Deir al-Balah since the beginning of January have killed more than 40 Palestinians. The agency said it is clear, as the UN has repeatedly stressed, that there is no safe place in Gaza. The United Nations noted that the recent Israeli regime airstrikes and sniper attacks on Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah, the only partially functioning hospital in the central Gaza Strip, has led many medical staff to take the difficult decision to evacuate the hospital despite the high need for medical care resulting from the continuing strikes. Recently, the hospital lost power as a result of a lack of fuel, putting patients, including infants, in incubators at extreme risk. Martin Griffiths, UN humanitarian chief, stated recently that the health sector in Gaza is being slowly chalked off as hospitals continue to come under fire. Doctors from charity group Medical Aid for Palestinians, who have been working at Al-Aqsa Hospital, told British Broadcasting Corporation recently that hundreds of patients are still being treated inside the hospital daily, but with decreasing numbers of staff available to treat the wounded and infirm. Many of the patients are arriving with horrific traumatic injuries, according to an emergency doctor. One of the physicians, Deborah Harrington, said there was little to no pain relief medication available while treating injured patients. She told the British Corporation, "I can't get out of my mind. A child came in alive, literally burnt to the bone. Their hands were contracting. Their face was just like coal, and they were alive and talking, and we had no morphine. I won't be able to wipe that memory and the smell being treated on the floor." The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza announced recently that the bed occupancy rate in all hospitals is more than 340% across departments and intensive care units. According to the Electronic Intifada, the Zionist regime has killed more than 100 journalists and media workers in Gaza since October 7th. Recently, an Israeli regime drone strike assassinated journalist Hamza al-Dahduh, the son of Wael Dahduh, Al Jazeera's Arabic language bureau chief in Gaza.
While al-Dahdu's wife and two children were killed in an Israeli airstrike in late October, and his cameraman Samer Abu Daqa was killed in a drone strike last month. Another reporter, Mustafa Thuraya, was killed in the same attack that killed Hamza. They were traveling together in a car to cover a story in southern Gaza. The Zionist regime's military claimed that al-Dahdu was an operative with Islamic Jihad and that Thuraya was active with Hamas. The Zionist regime's army claimed that the two journalists were traveling in a vehicle with a terror operative who was operating a drone. Six press freedom and human rights groups sent a letter to U.S. President Joe Biden demanding that his administration act immediately and decisively to promote the conditions for safe and unrestricted reporting on the hostilities in Gaza. More journalists have been killed in the first 10 weeks of the Zionist regime's attacks that have ever been killed in a single country over an entire year. The letter states, citing statistics by the Committee to Protect Journalists, one of the letter's co-authors. Meanwhile, the Zionist regime's high court has rejected an appeal by international media outlets to allow them independent access to the Gaza Strip.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Keeping the memory of martyrs alive, a necessary repetition for society. This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the organizers of the Congress for the commemoration of the 10,000 martyrs from the East Azerbaijan province. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on December 6, 2023. This characteristic of seeking martyrdom and the outstanding behavior that was observed in their sacrifices is not limited to the imposed war. This wasn't just during the sacred defense. This began before the revolution and has continued up until today. This city, Tabriz, has two martyred Friday prayer leaders. In other words, out of the five Friday prayer leaders who were martyred and who were among the best of our clerics in the country, two of them came from the city of Tabriz. These things are very important. What I am saying as a recommendation is that, first of all, do not let the effervesce of the martyrs' blood abate. Commemorating the martyrs should not be limited to just reminiscing about them. The piety, the sacrifices, the bravery, the shining gem within people like Martyr Bakri, which drew them to the middle of the field, for example, should be reflected and conveyed to the younger generation to serve as role models for them.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Our youth crave role models. The best role models are these. Some nations, which completely lack this, or lack it to a great extent, create and make up their own role models without them even existing. We have these role models before us. Martyr Bakri should not just be looked at on the battlefield. We should also see what he was like behind the scenes of the battlefield. We should see what he was like when he went to Tabriz University. We should see what activities he took part in during the pre-revolutionary period. That spirit should be seen. I met Martyr Mehdi Bakri in Mashhad before the revolution. He was a high-spirited, enthusiastic, intelligent person who was well able to analyze different events. This is what made him shine like that and draw people's hearts toward him during the sacred defense. This kind of spirit needs to be reflected. If we make films, if we write books, and if we compile and publish books of recollections about him, we must be careful to reflect his spirit in them. This spirit is a constructive spirit.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.